Today we have with us author Colin Tipping, who wrote the bestseller Radical Forgiveness. Hello, Colin, and thanks for being with us today.
Hello. Yes, my pleasure.
Wow, what a powerful book you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
What powerful work you do.
Yeah.
How did that come about, Colin?
Well, it's kind of a long and difficult story in a way, because no one thing created it. It sort of crept up on me in a way. Way back in 1984, when I first came over from England and emigrated here, I had no religious or spiritual background whatsoever at that time. But I came to Atlanta, Georgia, and there was a lot going on as far as New Thought work was concerned, and I got involved in going to Unity and things like that. So I began to tie into the New Thought paradigm, and of course, forgiveness being part of that. But the thing was that later on in the 90s, my wife and I started working with people who had cancer, and discovered that one of the main reasons that people get cancer in the first place is an inability to forgive. They tend to hold on to a lot of pain and resentment, anger, rage, that kind of thing. And so, we looked for a way to help them to forgive, and realized that traditional forgiveness wouldn't work at all. It just takes too long, and these folks only had a year to live anyway, most of them. And so, we needed something that would work really quickly and very effectively without going into any sort of therapy or anything like that. And so, it was at that point that I sort of reached back in and looked at some of the more metaphysical approaches that I had learned earlier on, and created some worksheets and all that kind of thing, which eventually came the book. So really, it was the cancer work that really prompted us to refine this idea and to put it in a way that people could understand it and use it in a very practical manner, because it was no good if it was just going to be an airy-fairy idea. It had to be something that people could use on a daily basis and really integrate into their daily life without being too much of a grind.
What was your background before you did this?
I was in education. I was a teacher, a high school teacher to start with, and then I went back to London University and Middlesex University to become a teacher trainer. So I was training teachers before I came over here.
Did you have some trauma or some dark night of the soul brought this forward in you?
People kind of hope that I do have this great story to tell, and I really don't. I would say that I had two divorces like anybody else who hasn't had those kind of things go on, but nothing that you would say would have been something that turned on a great light or anything like that. So no, this thing crept up on me, really. I always say it found me rather than I found it.
And it's just amazing.
Yeah.
So how would someone start learning? I mean, say somebody that's been through a divorce, that's been very, if they had had an easy life and they had never really had any bumpy roads like you were talking about, and suddenly they went through some emotional trauma like a divorce, and it just flipped the switch and made them go into this hatred mode. What would they do?
Well, let me say this. The first thing about radical forgiveness is that it is not what you might call an intervention technique. It's not like you come in when somebody is just, in their pain and suffering, and you don't come in and say, look, everything happens for a reason and there's nothing to forgive, which is, in fact, the basis of radical forgiveness. But you can't say that to somebody.
And they don't hear it
the
way you mean it.
It would be an abuse, actually, of that person, to put it that way. So the real thing that one has to do is, first of all, to just be with the person feeling their pain, feeling their emotions. And there are five stages to this radical forgiveness process, and the first two are just pretty simple. The first two are sharing the story, having someone hear what happened to you, so that you can share it, and then feeling the feelings. And it is not helpful to ask somebody to go beyond that stage until they've really had an opportunity to feel the grief and the pain and the anger and all that. And it's only when one has had a little time to be reflective that you can begin to bring in the idea of radical forgiveness. So
what if someone's stuck on blaming everyone else?
Well, then, you know, if they've been there a long time, the main thing about radical forgiveness is that it helps you to get through things quickly, you know. But the first phase is most definitely feeling the feelings and just being with it. But instead of keeping that that mindset for years and years and years, in other words, always blaming, always saying that, you know, we're holding onto resentment and guilt, not guilt, but, you know, whatever else you're holding on to, what radical forgiveness does is gives you an opportunity to move beyond that when you're ready. When you're ready, and I do stress that. And so, you know, as a radical forgiveness coach, which is what I train people to do, their first service to a person is to listen to them and to witness their story, validate their story, and have them give them total permission to feel the resentment or whatever it is that they feel. And that when the person is ready, then you can say, now look, there is another way of looking at this though. Would you like me to tell you about it? And so, that's when you would then open them to the possibility that there is a metaphysical way of looking at what happens to us in life that will move us out of the victimhood into a more peaceful way of being, and helps them to, you know, to let go of all those resentments and pain. So instead of being there for 20 years and suffering and getting sick, because holding on to resentment will make you sick, this is a way of releasing that kind of pain quickly before it gets to be something that would make you sick.
Can you give me like a little mini story of how you would start that off, and what, once they had gone through that grieving process and the sharing and the and experience thing?
Well, I mean, what the kind of things that you would say at that point is that, you know, do you understand or are you willing to be open to the possibility? That's as much as required here. It's not that you have to get a belief system out of it. I always say no belief is required. It's just a willingness to be open to the possibility that what happened to you was in fact self-created by your own higher self for your own learning and for your own growth, and that there was a gift in it somewhere. We don't know what that gift is or what the spiritual perfection is in there, but just being open to the possibility that there was a certain perfection in what happened enables the energy to shift. And that's really what is magical about this whole process, is that it's an energy system. And what I mean by that is, let's say that that at some early part of our life or even fairly recently, we were sexually abused, shall we say.
Okay.
Well, when that happened, what occurs to us is that an energy pattern is created in the physical body as well as the emotional and mental body, and that an energy pattern is representative of the wound that we have just sustained. And that energy pattern stays there. And we can do quite a lot of psychological work and nothing much will change, because the energy pattern is still there in the physical body and in the etheric body. And
now, when you say
body.
Energy pattern, I'm assuming, because I'm not very woo-woo at all. I'm more
right.
Science.
Yeah, and this isn't woo-woo either.
No, it's not.
No.
I think you mean hertz, actual energy in your electromagnetic field. Is that right?
Yes, it's like a little vortex that's around that hurt wound that we have somewhere lodged, you know, in our various subtle bodies. It's like a little tornado that's always there, and it's always putting out energy, and it will keep on reproducing the event. It has the effect of reproducing the event. So if you've been sexually abused once, the chances are you're going to get it again somewhere later on in life, either in the form of a husband that beats you or something like that. And the reason that happens is that your higher self is trying to give you an opportunity to heal the original. So therein lies the perfection of it, in a sense. So let's say that you would come to me and you said, you know, my husband's beating me up every day. I would immediately want to look for something that occurred in your early childhood that needs to be released, because otherwise why would you be keep repeating this same pattern again? And what radical forgiveness does, the technology is so simple, it doesn't do anything about the story. It doesn't do any psychological work at all. What it does, though, from it somehow dissolves that original energy field that's attached to the original wound and to the recent wound. And so it happens almost instantaneously. That's what's
so
magical about it.
That's absolutely amazing, Colin.
It is amazing. I mean, I'm amazed, but I've been doing this 10 years now, but I never cease to be amazed at what happens to people in the space of a few hours doing this work.
Do you have some stories you could share with us? One that sticks out in your mind?
Well, let's see. There's thousands of them. I've got a whole book full of stories here, but let's give you a quick one. I had a guy that came to the workshop, and he had he'd been beaten every day of his life by his father when he was little, and of course, you know, as a young adult, he became violent and went into prison, and yet he hadn't been able to find his anger. He couldn't access his own rage. So he did a long stretch of time in prison. I don't know how many, but it was more than 10. And when he did come to the workshop, he'd been out a number of years. But so we gave him permission to feel his anger, and we helped him work through the rage that he felt as a young kid, having been beaten every day of his life by his father. So he worked through that, and then he shared that he had some shame about having been taken into prison when his own daughter was only 3 months old. So he said, "I've never seen my daughter. I don't know where she is, and I feel terrible about that. I'm ashamed because I've basically abandoned my daughter. And besides that, I'd love to see her." Well, he got home, and when he got home, there was a message on his machine, and it was from a woman. She said, "I'm 29 years old." She said, "You don't know me, but I'm your daughter, and I want to connect with you."
Oh, my God.
So those kind of things happen all the time.
Synchronicities.
Yes, yes. So,
oh, my God.
It's amazing how it happens, but you can only explain it in terms of energy, and the quantum physicists could probably give you a darn good explanation from a theoretical standpoint of how it works, but I can't. I'm not a quantum physicist, so I kind of get a feel for that theory, but I certainly couldn't put myself out there and say, this is how it works, you know, this is string theory, and this is this, and this is this, and this is how it works. But having done it for 10 years, what I see is that it works, and that's enough for me.
Well, I noticed on your website you had, speaking of which, his website is radicalforgiveness.com, and everybody should take a look at it. It's a pretty powerful website. Mm-hmm. But you had a part on there about emotions and health and how it actually changes cells.
Yes. There's evidence to show that when people have emotional energy that they're holding on to, it actually shows up in the cells of the body as sort of needle-like structures. And then after we've done one of these processes, those structures are disappeared, if you would
really
put them under microscopes. And there is research to show that that's what happens when people do work of this kind. It was actually done to validate breath work, which we do in our workshops as well. But that's when you breathe for an hour and move the energy that way. That's a way to move the energy out of the body, is to use the breath. And that's what happened there. But you can actually see it in people. You can see it move.
What is it that's doing it? The DNA, or what is it?
I don't know. It's all I can say is that when somebody goes through the processes that we do, which by the way are very simple and easy, you can actually see or feel a shift in the person. You can see it in their face. They'll get a light bulb will come on, and all of a sudden there's a difference in them. And even if there isn't, a lot of people might leave the experience saying, "Well, nothing much happened," and then they get home like this guy did, and there's something on their phone, or their whole life has shifted and changed.
That's just amazing, Colin.
Mm-hmm.
I can't commend you enough on your work. So, what are some other things that you would address in one of your workshops to facilitate forgiveness?
You name it.
What if somebody doesn't recognize what it is that they're angry about?
Well, again, that's the beauty of it. You don't have to. Because all you need to do is to work on the thing that upset you yesterday, or on your way to work in the morning, or whatever it is, because that will represent something else of a deeper nature. So a darn good clue to this is if you get upset about something small and you get disproportionately upset about it, mm-hmm. that's a clear indication that that represents some earlier wound of a much more serious nature that needs to be forgiven. So all you do is to do a worksheet on the person that just upset you, and that automatically clears out the wound earlier on. So you don't even have to know what it is.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean? There's a thing on your website called Type C Connection. Tell us about that.
Type C people. This is connected to the cancer research, the work that we did. You know, when I told you that we found out that people with cancer, generally speaking, have a marked inability to forgive. And what the research shows is that these are what they call type C personalities. They have a tendency to deal with emotions in their life by stuffing them and repressing them and pretending that they don't exist. So they're usually very calm people, very even. But underneath all that, if you could get to it, there's a huge amount of rage. But it's so deep they don't know that it's there. They put everyone else first. This is what you might call the cancer personality. They put everybody first before themselves. Everybody's more important than them. They have very low sense of value for themselves and all that kind of thing. So that's what they call the type C personality. Now, the interesting thing about that is what this research shows, that there are only two predictors of who will get cancer or who is more likely than the rest of the population to get cancer. And the two factors are, one, genetic. If you have a gene, if you have a cancer gene, then you're more likely than the rest of the population to get it that don't have a gene. But the other one is what I've just been talking about. If you're a type C personality, you're more likely than the rest of the population to get cancer. And those are the only two predictors, just two. There are plenty of other factors like environment and food and, you know, toxins and all that kind of thing. Now, they're factors, but they're not predictors.
Have you found that different kinds of emotions manifest different kinds of cancers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Almost certainly. You can almost plot where in the body those cancers are.
Really? Can you tell us about that?
Like breast cancer, for instance, and I have to make clear, obviously, that I'm not giving medical information out here or professing any medical information. So I want to.
Of course, don't want anybody to get in trouble.
Yeah, I don't want to get into trouble. But what I've observed, put it that way, what I've observed in all the work that I've done with cancer folks and with ordinary people without that, is that, for instance, what I would ask somebody who had breast cancer is, "Who broke your heart?" And 9 times out of 10, you'll have somebody broke their heart 5 to 7 years prior to the onset of that breast cancer. So, see, we talked about this being an energy system. Well, the human body is an energy system, and it has its subtle energies that, of course, the medical profession don't recognize because they're not measurable or they can't be seen. But there's the other subtle bodies that can carry these energy patterns. The spiritual body can carry it. The emotional body can carry it. And if that wound occurs and gets held in those outer subtle bodies, they have a tendency to work themselves into and to manifest in the physical body within about 5 to 7 years.
What about, say, prostate and female organ cancer?
Well, what we do here is look at what the kind of issues that get held in those chakras. So, prostate, for instance, would be your root chakra, and the kind of issues that get lodged in that area of the body are issues of basic security and safety. So if you have a tendency to hold on to ideas of that you're not secure in yourself, that you're not properly grounded to your lifestyle or your purpose, and that the people that get to you, people that push your buttons, are those kind of people that undermine your security and safety, then you're going to have something crop up in that area of the body, which is, you know, genital areas down to the knees. If you have sex issues and money issues, they're going to occur in your second chakra, which would be the, you know, if for females, it would be uterus and all those kind of things. So by studying chakras, you can get a very good clue as to where things like that will crop up. And what's useful about that is once you know that, then you know where your forgiveness lies.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've got, if anybody has a prostate problem, for instance, then I would immediately ask that person, who do you know have in your life who's tending to undermine your sense of security? And that's where the forgiveness work would need to be done. It's oftentimes anger can be held there too.
Mm-hmm.
In the colon, lower colon, we can keep rage in there too.
What kind of things would you identify with men with colon cancer and pancreas issues and stuff like that?
I don't know about pancreatic. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to say that. But certainly, if we looked at it from a point of view of chakras, then you're looking at the third chakra, and that's about power and self-esteem and those kind of issues. So if you've got people in your life that are really resonating those issues with you, and you're having pancreatic troubles, then it's a good idea to forgive those people that are causing you to feel powerless, or that they're manipulating you through a form of control. Oftentimes, mothers appear in that chakra.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So, nearly everybody has mother and father to forgive. In the end, when it gets right mm-hmm. down to it, that's where we usually end up.
Yeah, those are the people that condition us to be who we are.
Yeah, and to give us the experiences that we actually signed on for. Because, you see, what we're really saying in radical forgiveness is that you're getting exactly what you want. And by that, we mean you're getting exactly what you chose to have as part of your human experience. When you signed up for this journey, your soul's journey, then there are certain things this is just a story that we make up, but it's the basis really of radical forgiveness, that if we come into the life experience and we want to have a certain amount of experience here as a human, or as a spiritual being having a human experience, shall I say.
The whole purpose of ascension, I believe.
Yes, but part of that deal is that we have chosen certain things to experience in our lifetime so that we can feel the feelings and to go through a breakdown and then a breakthrough into the ascension consciousness. But first we have to take on a number of tasks and a number of experiences. So in that sense, that's where the perfection lies at the bigger picture level, not just that we're healing something that happened to us in the childhood, although that's part of it. But the real stuff comes when you become open to the possibility that you self-created everything in your life and that nothing has happened to you. It's all happened for you.
That's right. I would imagine that this not only affects, but because we're all one in energy,
yeah.
I would imagine this would affect the whole mass consciousness of the entire world.
Yes, it will.
Because the more we do one changes all.
The more we do this work, you know, work of this nature, and I do want to stress that no one has to believe in this. This is not a belief system. It just requires just a small amount of willingness to be open to these possibilities. But what we find is that willingness is what really makes it happen. And willingness is a very high level vibration. And but when we do this, when we do this work, that we could actually, if there was enough of us doing it at a certain time, we could create world peace.
Oh, I totally believe that.
Yeah.
I on my show sometimes I talk about how, you know, what goes around comes around. It goes down the street, round the corner, and around the world just because
yeah.
of your behavior or your view on whatever, your perspective on what happened.
Yeah.
So do you teach living in the moment?
Absolutely. Yeah, and being in the now, because that's the only place there is. And, you know, that's where we need to have our energy. Now, if you've invested it in the past, then you don't have it in the present.
How would you teach living in the moment? How do you explain that to people? Because so many people don't understand. They think they do.
Yeah.
But then when you say practice it, they don't know what to do.
Yeah, I know. And it's not easy because we live in a world of time and space. So it's very difficult to transcend that. And I don't think there's any necessity to. But what I do say is this, from a point of view of the radical forgiveness and also the work we did with the people who were sick, is that the more energy you have invested in holding on to the past or worrying about the future, the less you're going to be in the now. And so, I usually like to draw it as a diagram. People get it much more easily when I can draw it as a diagram, but that's the first idea. So the work in order to bring yourself into the now is first of all, give up worrying about the past and the future. And then come to a place of surrendering to whatever wants to happen in the future, and you just all you're concerned with then is the now. So that's not easy though. That takes some discipline. Well, not so much discipline, but a habit. You have to form a habit of that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm developing a program that's going to be a 12-month program for helping people develop that paradigm in their own mind so that they will eventually end up, for the most part, being in the now.
Do you have some suggestions about how to do that?
Being in the now, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a big part of what we're all doing, I think, is to develop this part of us that I call the observer. That part of us that is watching all the time what we're doing, our self-awareness. Scientists tell us we're the only animals on the planet that have self-awareness. I'm not sure that that's true, but nevertheless, we do have self-awareness. But for the most part, we don't listen to that self-awareness, or we're not conscious of it, and so we act like fools. We create wars, and we do everything that's against what we know to be the truth of who we are. So doing the work that we're doing helps us develop that part of us that is watching and saying, look at your thinking, look at your habits, look at what you're doing. And it's a case of slowly developing that mental muscle so that we're always aware of where we are in time and space. And there are little exercises you can do. Let me give you one just simple exercise, okay, about being in the now. When you're driving along in the car, put your attention on all four wheels of the car.
Okay.
That'll bring you in the now.
Yeah.
Because you're right there in the present, and you're conscious of the noise, you're conscious of the vibration, you're conscious of them being beneath you, you're conscious of them steering you, holding you. Mm-hmm. So that's a little what we call mindfulness exercise of being in the now instead of dreaming and going off somewhere else.
What's another one? I like that.
Another one is to pick a word that you're going to be conscious of every time you say it for 1 week. So let's say you have a word like flow, right? F-L-O-W.
Okay.
Well, every time you hear it or see it, you want to say, oh, there's that word again. And it just helps you to be right there in the present moment. You know, every time you say that or you say a more common word like help or something like that, but every time you say it, your mind triggers for you to come into the present and say, ooh, look what I just said. I just said that word. It's a simple exercise, but it brings you into the moment, see?
So you're basically teaching us to stand back from a third-party perspective.
Yes.
And observe our own bodies interacting with other people,
yes.
Right?
Yes. We're doing that all the time, but we're not very conscious of it. We don't listen to that observer who might be saying, watch what you're doing. It's all part of our intuition, I think, really.
I do, too, by the way. I really do, too.
Yes.
How do we get people, anybody, to focus on hearing what that other person is trying to say to us as opposed to trying to get our two cents in so that...
Are you talking about another person or this observer?
Either one. Either one. You have a comment on either one?
Yeah.
You know, you get into an argument with a spouse, say,
mm-hmm.
and what they're trying to do usually is look for some type of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't hear that. Because we're worried about them hearing our perspective.
Yeah.
You know, does that make any sense?
Uh-huh.
How do we break that habit?
Well, listening is an art. There's no doubt about that. And it takes a while to learn how to do that if you're not in the habit of it. Some people are just naturally better listeners than others. But with the radical forgiveness perspective, what this does for us is this, that what we know is that when someone says something and we react to it because we're not happy about what it is, that means that there's a button in us that's being pushed. So there's a mirror. The mirror effect is taking place here. So if somebody says something to me and I get mad about it, what I need to know is that that's me. And there's a part of me that I'm seeing in this other person that I don't like, and therefore it's an opportunity for me to forgive it.
So how would you handle that in the moment?
You wouldn't necessarily say anything right there in the moment, but you would just be aware of it, that even though I'm upset, I recognize that there's a part of me that's being reflected here that needs to be healed, and I feel a sense of gratitude for this person. That's the instant forgiveness, if you like.
Okay.
And it takes a while to get that so that you're not in reaction.
Uh-huh.
My wife's a hell of a lot better at it than I am.
Takes a while not to act to that hot red button, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Well, Colin, we're about out of time. If you have one thing to say to the world that would make a difference, what would that be?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I would just ask people to be reflective, to reflect on the idea that the world out there is a reflection of the world within them, and that what shows up in the world is a reflection of how they want to see it, and therefore they have the power to change it.
Now, if someone wants to contact you or buy your books or come to your workshops, how would they do that?
By far the best way is to do the go straight to the website, radicalforgiveness.com. It's so easy to remember. Everything is up there. If they want to call me, then they can call me on 770-428-9181.
Now, you have a workshop coming up soon, don't you?
Yeah, we do a workshop here in Atlanta every month.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Generally speaking, we do it the first weekend of every month, and the next one is the first weekend in November. I won't be doing another one, though, until February, because I'm going to be in Germany and Switzerland and those kind of places for a month.
Lucky you. Enjoy your time here.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, Colin Tipping, thank you so much for who you are and the work you're doing. I applaud you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Agape, my friend, and thanks for coming on my show.
Namaste.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.